Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop. Vox Pop is the name of the show. I've been doing it a few years. It's Tuesday, January 28th. We're off to a good start. Joining us once again to talk about recent events, developments, and technologies in the field of climate change and alternative energy research is Dan DeLury, Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School and former White House Director of Clean Energy. Dan has over 25 years' experience. If you have a climate change question, give us a shout. 800-348-2551. We'll find out what he has been up to. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Name of the show, voxpop@wamc.org. Or 800-348-2551. Dan DeLury and your clean energy calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here to take your climate change and alternative energy questions is Dan DeLury, Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law School, with over 25 years' experience, including as an exec with utilities and clean energy companies. Dan is the former White House Director of Clean Energy, so he's a real fancy pants, and it's real good to have him on the show here today now that he's back from the White House. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email. The number is 800-348-2551. Dan DeLury, the prodigal son, is back. Hey, man, we had to cancel a couple shows. You got a White House gig. How'd that work out?
Well, it worked out great. Yeah, it's great to be back. It was last summer at some point, which was the last time that I was on. And right after that, I was asked to go to work in the White House.
Amazing.
To become Director of Clean Energy. And what I was focused on, and something maybe we'll talk about later, is there's such a tremendous growth in electricity demand going on right now in the U.S., and in particular due to the growth of data centers and AI. And so that was something that they were looking for someone with my background and experience to come in and help them coordinate the agencies as they tried to assess that, evaluate it, and in some cases even to begin intervening in regulatory proceedings where utilities were trying to decide what kind of power plants to build to handle this new demand.
So when you say intervening, what do you mean? What did
you do? Intervene is a regulatory term. It means you participate in a regulatory proceeding before a regulatory body, like here in New York, the PSC, the Public Service Commission. So it means you have some sort of standing and you get involved in making your case as to what you think the utility should do. And one of the executive orders from President Biden several years ago was that the federal government, the largest electricity customer in the country, should only buy clean energy going forward. And so when you have a stake in what kind of electricity is available, and if natural gas plants are what utilities and other power providers begin to turn to, then there's not as much clean energy in the hole. And again, I mean, we're behind on emissions reductions anyway. So there's both an opportunity for AI to help in decarbonization, but also it's a threat to decarbonization. And if I can just put a fine point on
sure.
that, the Department of Energy a couple of weeks ago put out a report and said that data centers, because of AI, in 3 years may go from 4% of total electricity consumption, which is already a lot.
For the nation?
For the nation.
Okay.
It may go up as high as 12% in 3 years. 12% of total electricity consumption.
Now, you and I have talked a lot about various modalities of clean energy production. Where did the Biden administration stand on nuclear power?
I'll say pro-nuclear, although maybe they didn't use the pro word, but no, very supportive of nuclear. I think that was since the beginning of the Biden administration. And nuclear, and, you know, I've talked about nuclear on shows before, but nuclear holds a lot of promise, and we need to do something in the way of producing emissions-free electricity. So, I mean, you probably even saw, and I guess this has happened since I was last here, that Three Mile Island is reopening.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you and I have been around long enough. Did you think that you'd ever hear those words?
Wow. I don't know. I mean, I remember 79, right?
I think that
when
was
when that
it,
happened.
Yes.
But as I recall, nobody died.
Correct.
And it was much ballyhooed in the press and throughout the country, and with good reason. But, you know, nobody really was harmed.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was an impetus for the Carter administration to kind of lock down breeder reactors at that time, right?
Yeah, you're correct. Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah. I mean, it was something. I mean, back then, it was not yet about carbon and CO2 emissions yet. It was right after that it became all about that. And so you know, you had, I think none of the environmental community was in support of nuclear because it was all about nuclear waste and
right.
safety and all of that. But as soon as the tables turned, and this is my own personal story, as soon as the tables turned and it was all about carbon emissions, then, you know, I did a 180 on nuclear, and I said, this is too important as an emissions-free source of electricity, and we can, if we put our mind to it, handle the safety and the waste problem.
All right, putting aside nuclear for a moment, the number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined by former White House Director of Clean Energy, Dan DeLury. I like the ring of that. That sounds pretty good, man. Putting aside nuclear for a minute, and
sure.
We'll probably come back to it. You know, you mentioned this AI, the massive influx
right.
in need for power, for electricity. Is there any other format that is so-called clean that can deliver this on a large scale?
By format, you mean source, you mean?
Yeah, wind, solar.
Well, wind and solar, although, you know, that gets into the executive order. I'll call it the clash of executive orders that have been issued by the new president. You know, one is trying to wipe offshore electricity or offshore wind power as well as other wind power. That's just because of a personal preference, as I understand the story. And yet, at the same time, it's calling for a boost in AI as we are in a competitive race with China over who's going to, you know, who's going to be the AI technology king or provider and all that. So, but the one thing that's interesting, and to learn more about AI, and since I had free time, I went to the big Davos conference last week in Switzerland. And, well, it was amazing. I mean, I had always sort of, you know, put it down in absence as something that was just a bunch of
elitists
yeah. getting together. But this year, the whole thing was about AI. And so I learned a lot more about AI, perhaps not enough to explain it to everyone
yeah.
on the call.
Let's
today.
Not even start that.
But, yeah, let's not.
It's
but,
a different show.
But, you know, for instance, I talked with some geothermal companies were there. Geothermal is kind of like the emissions-free renewable source that no one ever talks about because they think it's just, you know, local, or you can do it here or do it there.
Right.
But just like heat pumps are now able to do it everywhere, modern geothermal technology can do it. It might be a matter of how far you drill down. And it's interesting, this one geothermal company, I wish I had said this to them, but they said this to me, said, well, yeah, we should qualify under drill, baby, drill because
yeah, you're drilling.
Because we're drilling. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, I can make hay with that, with that right there. So anyway, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, nuclear, wind, solar, you know, geothermal, and you add storage, and you know, solar. I just saw a stat this morning. Solar eclipsed coal as an electricity source. I actually thought this happened a few years ago, but it happened in 2024. Mm. But now, you know, people are talking about not executing planned retirements of coal plants because of AI and the data centers.
And then just the need for power. This email came in from Patrick, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Patrick in North Adams writes, many people don't know that Three Mile Island has two reactors. Unit 2 had the accident in 79. It was mothballed. Unit 1 continued generating until 2019.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. And also, Three Mile Island, and I've been told this by nuclear folks, has room for another big reactor.
So there has been a, I don't know if it has been a moratorium, but it's been a pretty strong pause for a number of decades now in the nuclear startups here in this country. I don't know if they stopped altogether, but, I mean, are we lagging too far behind on that? I mean, given how much electrification we want to do, are we way behind on the nuke production?
Well, we're certainly behind where we could be. The rest of the world has, you know, I mean, with the exception of Japan and the accident that they had, but the rest of the world has been building nuclear plants.
Europe.
Well, France takes pride in being, what, 70%+ nuclear?
Yeah.
Or whatever. So, you know, there's talk about the new small modular reactors, SMRs. And but in talking to, because I've been delving into this as well, trying to understand it better. And in talking to nuclear folks, the SMRs actually are more costly per unit produced, in part because there's no standard design yet.
Aha.
And so actually the big units, this is sort of counterintuitive to me, and I'm sure to you and the listeners, but the big units may hold more promise, especially if they can be, if new ones can be put on existing sites or perhaps on federal sites.
Wow, very interesting. Now, let's take a quick break here. 800-348-2551 is our number. Dan DeLoria is with us, and we'll get your calls in a moment. It's Vox Pop Riggraff with you. We're joined today by Dan DeLoria, former White House Director of Clean Energy, a Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law School. And let's begin in Sandgate, Vermont. It's Chris's turn. Chris, go ahead. Hey, Chris, can you turn your radio down a little bit there?
Yeah, it's not on at all, actually.
Okay.
Are you having problems?
No, I just heard somebody talking that sounded like us. But go ahead.
Just a few things. There's a friend of mine has a nephew that's working at a company in Devens, Massachusetts. They do fusion, and they tout that they will have customers this year.
Fusion?
He says.
You mean nuclear fusion?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't hear that. That's quite a bit of news.
Well. Yeah, his nephew says that may be a little optimistic, but there's that. They're in Devens. I won't say the name. But also, the European car of the year is the Renault R5. It's an extension of the old little roller skate that we all used to love in the 80s, I guess. All electric. And it starts at 23,000, and it's supposedly fantastic. Well, you know, European car of the year.
Nice.
And as a Vermonter, Dan and I are a little probably worried about the tariffs from Canada, because we get all of our electricity from there.
Interesting.
So that's it in a nutshell.
All right. Well, thanks, Chris. That's a good start. Thank you.
Yeah, the first, just again this morning, I saw another article about one of the new fusion, I think it's correct to say startups, has made progress. And so for the first time, I guess I want to say ever, there's near-term promise for fusion, but there are no fusion facilities that are operating right now.
It's a game changer when it happens,
or close to being commercial, to my knowledge. So I'm not surprised to hear about the one in Devens. There are others around the country, but it's not really ready to make a contribution yet. The tariffs, because I want to do EVs last. I'm not sure what I can add to the tariffs. I think everyone's reading that as headline news. And I think more interesting than the Canadian one is the Colombian one that we all just read about in general news. And it seems like this is the cudgel that the new administration has decided to use to try and do some deals or do what it wants to do. But let me move to EVs.
Yeah.
And I'm not familiar with the Renault, and I think that's great to hear, especially at that price. But here in the U.S., EV sales were higher than the year before. I forget what the number is, but it's not like they've gone down. It's probably fair to say that they're slower than people had hoped they would be, especially the manufacturers. But I just want to take a moment because I've been thinking a lot about EVs lately when I see a lot of people that I know, including friends, that have not bought an EV when they certainly could have based on several factors. I mean, these days, if you can charge at home, either in your garage or in your on the side of your house. I mean, if you don't travel that much per day, you're not really giving up anything on performance and you're gaining something on maintenance. I'm kind of surprised that people are not at least evaluating them a little bit more closely. I mean, after all, this is part of the climate solution. I get asked all the time, what should I do? And one of the things is certainly to reject EVs without really thinking about EVs. Now, when I drive between Washington and Vermont, I have to stop and charge. And so I'm maybe, when you take out the bathroom break and the coffee and all of that,
yeah.
I mean, what, maybe 20 minutes extra, maybe 30, it depended on how much I started with or other factors or whatever. But that's maybe once every 6 weeks. And so, I'm willing to give that up for the climate. I mean, and I think just that people need to think a little bit harder. The price should not be an issue anymore. There are more models out there. The tax credit. I mean, there is no EV mandate, by the way. That's one of the new executive orders to repeal the mandate. There is none. But anyway, I'll stop there. I just think that
you like your EV a lot.
Well, I do, but I mean, they're all good, and I just think that people are. Now, if you live in an, and I've said this on a show before, if you live in an apartment and you can't charge overnight, then I'm not telling you to think about an EV.
So let me just ask you,
sure.
And this is not scientific. This is just based on you living in Vermont and it's cold and, any problems with the battery and keeping it charged and a loss of mileage or range because of the cold weather?
There is loss. But when you're starting off with, 250 miles of range, maybe it goes down to 230. And I mean, there are, 250 is not a big number for EVs anymore. I mean, you're talking about ones in the threes and above. So, a little bit. But again, let me talk about hybrids.
Okay, man.
A lot of people are buying hybrids. And here's my take on that. I don't think a hybrid is going to be worth a lot in 3 or 5 years.
Why?
Because the EVs are going to be so good and the chargers are going to be so well dispersed that I'm not sure who will then want a hybrid. I mean, hybrids were invented to try and have better fuel economy.
Yeah, better mileage.
And that's good even for the environment or whatever. But they're just not enough of a transition to an EV. People think they are. I would argue they are not. And I think we're going to come to a point where hybrids maybe are not something that have a lot of trade-in value.
Well,
that's a big, I mean, it's a big claim on my part, but I've been thinking about it a lot lately.
It's apparent that gas propulsion is still a thing, and so hybrids then should be a thing if people want better gas mileage. I don't think gas-powered cars are going anywhere for a while.
For a while would be the key phrase there.
Well, I guess it depends on how you define a while, but probably going to outlive us.
All right. Maybe next question.
All right, let's go. 800-348-2551. That's our number. Dan DeLore is here, and we'll go to Campbell Hall. Renee, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have an interior question about re-insulating my house.
Okay.
Is that something that you can cover?
Well, I think I might be able to say something, but I'm not an expert. I'm not a home remodeler or...
Okay. And Renee, before Dan starts, if you're dissatisfied with his answer, we'll be doing a home improvement show with... we do a home improvement show every few months.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Darren Tracy will be on, and he's good with that stuff.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Dan.
Okay. Thank you very much. I had one contractor tell me that I only needed cellulose in my attic, and only on the bottom of the attic. And then I had another contractor who said I needed closed cell foam running up the rafters on the ceiling of the attic as well. There's such difference between the two of them. I'm not even talking about price. I'm just talking about the philosophy of which one is better for sealing a home. Do I do both? Do I do one, not the other? I was just wondering if you had any opinion on that.
Yeah, you don't do both. What did the second person say? I presume the second person that came in, you said, but the first guy said this, and...
Yes, he said, no, absolutely not. He said, he said, otherwise you're going to cook in the summer and you're going to freeze in the winter unless we put the foam on the inside of the attic ceiling. Now, the other guy said, number one, I believe it's a poison, the closed cell foam. They told me that I had to leave the house and take my cats out for 24 hours. And I'm like, for 24 hours? Well, what happens on the 48th hour? Like, is there still poison, like, lurking around?
Yeah, I can't help you on that one. But here's what I can say, and I guess it's all that I can say, is both positioning of insulation happens as part of insulating jobs. But I don't know which one is appropriate for your house.
This is a Darren Tracy thing. Renee, Tracy will have you covered 100 times. So next time, I don't know exactly when he's on, but within a month or 6 weeks, I'm sure he will be on again.
Yeah. Thanks, Renee.
And thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. That's our number. This email from Emily. Is there a plan for dealing with the radioactive waste generated by nuke plants? And isn't that an issue? When I hear strategies for mitigating climate change that include creating more nuclear power plants, I wonder about the waste, which, as I understand, was the major environmental concern that made environmentalists wanted us to turn away from nuclear power in the first place. Mass amounts of poisonous radioactive waste in exchange for less carbon may not be such a good thing in the long term. That's from Emily.
Yeah, thanks, Emily. A couple things. One is, the nuclear waste is highly toxic, poisonous, and all of that. But it is in concentrated form. We don't have, and you may remember this being an issue nationally and in the Congress, we don't have a national depository, a place to put all of the nuclear waste
Flats,
of the plants. Yucca Mountain in Nevada was the place that was starting to have been developed. I mean, it was actually underway, but politics said no. And so we don't have one. And so the nuclear plants have been storing their waste on site, which works until it doesn't or whatever. So, but Go ahead, Rick.
What do they do in Europe? I mean, France has been using this for decades. And now, as I understand it, and I'm obviously not a nuclear engineer, I could probably not even spell engineer, but I thought that the French used breeder reactors, and I thought the breeder reactors helped you reconstitute the spent fuel rods so there was less waste. And I think Carter put a stop to that in 79, I believe, in this country.
I believe you're right on that. What I wanted to go back to, though, it was not so much the waste and the storage of it that was the political issue going back to Three Mile Island. It was the release through an accident at the plant.
Right.
And so that was really the issue. And then the other thing that I've said in the show before, I believe that technology and government and the private sector can handle what's called a point source, you know, where all of this toxic waste is from a nuclear plant, that they can better handle that than trying to reduce the carbon emissions from a billion different sources.
Such an interesting point.
Because that's why we're struggling on carbon emissions is, I mean, we know where the big emissions come from, and it's not all about our personal carbon footprint, but it's still from millions of different places. It's from every car on the road. It's from all of these different places. And so that's what is making it so difficult to reduce emissions. And so it's strictly a trade-off in my mind that, you know, I would rather trust dealing with the waste issue and let nuclear contribute and grow on zero emissions electricity than to think that we can cap off every possible source of carbon emissions.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. It's Dan DeLory with us today, former White House Director of Clean Energy. And let's now go to Albany. And Nicholas, you're on.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
You bet. Go ahead.
Oh, hey. So my question was just how do you deal with? I've been hearing about this since I was in college in 2011. That I was hearing, oh, this was 20 years ago. We needed to turn around our carbon emissions. It's past due. We're now just trying to catch up. And I've been hearing this for so long, and I constantly always hear from the other side these narratives that just clearly come from capitalist pigs that want to suck the planet dry without really caring about future generations at all. And it's like at a point where I'm like, when are we going to stop like being the polite ones? Like, I don't want to be in the future and look back and go, hey, at least we were the polite ones. Like, these people can't be, they can't be discomforted by like a soggy straw yet. They're not ever going to make any kind of substantial sacrifices and
Nicholas,
comfort at all. And it's frustrating.
Right. Yeah, I'm not going to get into these people part of that. But what I am going to say is that, you know, emissions, yes, we should have started tackling emissions in a serious manner decades ago. And we're not in a good position. You probably saw headlines that said that we've reached this 1.5 Celsius target. And there's so much baked in that there's climate change to come and impact us. Even if we stopped all emissions tomorrow, it's still up there in the air. But the other thing that I want to make clear is that this is not a cliff situation. So, you know, we have this much emissions, and that's not a good thing, but then it's to avoid more emissions. We just have to stop, and we know we can't stop on a dime, but we need to start taking emissions into effect on almost every decision, governmental or private.
All right, Nicholas, thanks for the call. Dan DeLory is our guest, 800-348-2551. Let's grab an email before we take a break, and then we'll go back to the phones. Janet wants to know, could you talk about home battery storage systems powered by solar? Is it practical and affordable? Can they totally replace other energy sources? So you need a lot of batteries.
Well, it's totally practical. I mean, people are doing it. Affordable depends on your own personal cost effectiveness calculation, how much electricity you use, how big a battery. I mean, you know, so that's a question that, you know, that installers will help you. I mean, you should really go, and I say this on almost every show, go to your state Department of Energy or your state energy office. It's NYSERDA in New York. It's Efficiency Vermont in Vermont. I mean, every state has one, and that's where you're going to get your neutral information. Also, the nonprofit I always mention is rewiring.org, which focuses on electricity.
So Dan wrote in, and he used Pig Latin in the subject heading, so we have to do it. Ixnay to the Ofme, Ray, according to recent news, closed foam in the attic rafters degrades wood over time. UK mortgage companies are not providing mortgages to houses with it because of this. Now, I haven't confirmed that. That's from Dan, who used Pig Latin, so therefore he has credence on this program. 800-348-2551. Dan DeLurie is here, and we'll be back to take your calls in a moment. Lockbox is open. You know, we're doing quite well. You have done fabulous work. We need more because the fund drive begins Monday morning at 6 a.m. Every dollar will count. You can make your pledge right now, wamc.org. I'm told some browsers require you to put the www in, so www.wamc.org. Don't add any extra W's. That's enough. We are joined today by Dan DeLurie, former White House Director of Clean Energy and Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Peter writes in, Trump and Musk is the subject heading. No Pig Latin, but Trump and Musk. Please comment on Trump and his pal Musk. Peter says, Trump doesn't believe in climate change and will not support any green programs. Musk is progressive on green energy, like electric cars. So go ahead, Dan, you comment on that. That's
sure.
From Peter.
I'm going to preface by saying, as I understand these things.
That's a real good way to do it.
Elon Musk, yes, at one point he was talking about the climate and said that that was part of his goal as a businessman and all of that. I don't think he talks about that so much anymore. In terms of EVs, and also we talked about household storage. And remember, Tesla makes the leading battery.
Powerwall, right?
Powerwall, it's called, yeah. And so, you know, Elon has often talked about his company as a clean energy company. But interestingly, and I say this from what I believe I read, is that he was in support of President Trump wanting to eliminate the EV tax credit. As I said in my response to the last call, there is no EV mandate, even though one of the executive orders says it repeals the EV mandate. What there is a federal tax credit of $7,500 right off the bottom line of your taxes, which I took advantage of when I bought my EV. And so Elon supposedly has said that's not needed anymore.
Ah.
Some of his critics have said that, well, he's got a far enough lead now that he doesn't need the credit.
You mean lead in the marketplace?
In the market,
oh,
yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'll leave that there.
Okay.
The other thing I'll say, though, again, well, I guess I said this, but once again, these executive orders, people need to understand, whether they're about energy or climate or anything else, executive orders can only affect the executive agencies that you know of, you know, household names like Department of Labor and Department of Defense and all of that. Some of the executive orders, in my view, seem to not be lawful because they're changing something that only the Congress can change. The big thing on the news today and yesterday is the freezing of all loans and grants and disbursement of any funds. And this sets up a battle because there was actually a Supreme Court decision that reiterated Congress's authority to spend money. and that the federal agencies, they can help disperse that money, but they can't stop it.
Show changed remarably there from the Dan DeLurie's our guest.
I'm just sorry. Right. I know a lot of people have that question.
Right.
So,
well, how about one about gallium nitride and silicone carbide? Does Dan know anything about gallium nitride and or silicone carbide power semiconductor technology? Any thoughts on the claimed improvement over current charging technology and storage tech using these materials? Well, what do you think about that?
That's
fancy
the
pants?
First question since I've been coming on this show that I can't even begin to give an answer to. So,
well,
these are
advanced battery technologies.
I'm sorry. Basically. Yeah, I mean, batteries are going to get better all the time.
Can you make that homework for the next show?
I'll see if I can.
If the Trump administration doesn't call you to be a White House clean energy director,
It's interesting that one of the executive orders I think boosts lithium mining in
Utah,
the U.S. While at the same time other orders kind of tamp down on the need for lithium.
Interesting. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm sure Greenland.
And I'm not being
Greenland
politically critical here. I'm just saying this is what everyone is seeing here. That the there's a lot to be worked out in those executive orders, and don't take them as if they were a law.
You know what?
That's all.
For a guy who came from the Biden White House, you're very unpolitical on this program. It's amazing.
I'm just a neutral climate and energy guy.
All right, man. Well, let's see how you fare with Judy and Woodstock. Here we go. Judy, go ahead.
I tend to think about systems. And you have been close enough to the centers of power to maybe have some thoughts about this. My issue with nuclear power, going back to when I used to know, the dean of engineering at University of Michigan and the guy who ran the power company for that part of Michigan, and they would say things like, "I'm not afraid of nukes." Okay, here's my system question. You are talking about all the point sources for carbon emissions. Absolutely right. If they are generating nuclear waste on a site, they can't leave it there forever, right? I think you would agree with that. They have to move it to places where it can be safely stored. That is either going to be by truck or by train, which raises a serious issue of safety and, like, traffic accidents and that sort of thing. We already saw what happened in East Palestine, Ohio, with a train accident. So if we think systems and we think point source for nuclear the way we have been thinking about point source for carbon dioxide, how do you deal with that?
Okay.
Assuming a government that's even willing to think about it.
Judy,
I
like it.
We have right now.
Let's put Dan DeLurie on the spot here. All right, go ahead.
Well, here's how I'm going to begin, I guess. I don't know whether or not there are modifications and technologies and different ways such that we can store on site. I mean, you raise a legitimate issue in terms of the safety of transport of nuclear waste from one place to another. That's a serious issue, and I can't really comment on that, how to make it better or what the odds are of accidents or anything like that. But I don't know that we can rule out permanent storage on site. I just don't know that.
Okay. Judy, thanks a lot. Let's go to Saratoga Springs, and it's Peter. Peter, you're on.
Hey there. Two quick ones. First, as somebody that heats their wood primarily with firewood from a wood stove, I'm curious to see Dan's forecast on if there are going to be new restrictions on doing that. And then the other question was, any insight into hydrogen power cars? I remember George W. Bush citing that in one of his State of the Union addresses many, many years ago, and there seems to be a little more increased development on that.
All right. We have talked about hydrogen power and fuel cells and whatnot.
So my comment on hydrogen has been in the past that for heavy-duty vehicles, for fleet vehicles, for that type of thing, I think it's being used to a certain extent, and I think there's promise there. But hydrogen cars and the need to, transport and create and pipe the hydrogen, I just don't think that is ever going to beat EVs. I don't know why it wood. I mean, we need hydrogen for other purposes. And so I just don't think we're going to have that all pulled together. Now, when you've got a fleet and you've got a point place of storage and generation and refueling and all of that, I think that's a different thing. But but again, that's about all I can say. I'm just not familiar. And the other question was on wood, right? Wood fire? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, wood burning stoves.
Yeah, I mean, wood burning stoves. You know, they do emit particulates. That's really the issue. I mean, yes, I could argue that they're emitting carbon dioxide too, but you know, people seem to have looked at them as having separate attributes, and so you don't have a lot of regulation on them, and I don't think you're going to see some of those. But I would always say that, you know, the thing with wood stoves are the particulates. We all get caught up in carbon dioxide, but there's other things we don't want to put in the the air.
All right, Peter, thanks a lot for the call. To Seward, New York we go. And Kathy, you're on with Dan DeLore. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm also into this talking about the nuclear power plants.
Okie doke.
And, you know, the ground has pretty much been covered on it. Yeah, I'm not fond of it myself. The waste lasts forever. And, you know, and I don't like the idea that they don't cool that nuclear waste and emission also. You know, they say there's no emissions. That's not true. It's emitting radioactive stuff all the time. And I have another little bit about the fusion. And the latest thing that I heard was that they got the fusion process to the point where it takes them a little less energy to make it happen than the energy that they're getting out of it. And this was done on a pretty small scale, maybe at that same place that that guy's nephew works at or whatever. Just a little bit better energy production than what it takes to make the whole process happen. So I'll let you guys know that.
Hey, Kathy, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kathy. First of all, in fusion, you've identified what fusion is. And that is, it's the dream source where you put less energy in than you get out. And but it was only a couple of years ago. I mean, it's such that I talked about it on the show where that was first achieved in a laboratory on a bench test. And so
was that confirmed even? I remember when that came down.
No, I think it was confirmed. Okay. I think maybe we talked about that, but again, it was, I mean, it could be 5 years ago.
Well, they've been talking about this since the late 40s,
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, it's always been right around the corner.
Yeah.
But anyway, but on the radioactive emissions, I can't really comment on that other than that that is subject to government regulation. And so I think that's monitored pretty closely. And that's all I can say. But on CO2, and I want to pick up on what you said where the waste lasts forever. Climate change lasts forever. I mean, that's the situation that we're in. I mean, we're not turning climate change around in hundreds or thousands of years. It's here. And that's what goes back to that, 1.5, and we need to look at not going any further into it. So, it's a trade-off. The lesser of two evils, or the evil that's easier to manage. I don't know what metaphor to use or create.
Right.
But it's a big deal. And again, my own personal viewpoint is that I'd rather trust the management of the waste issue than trying to and thereby put more emissions-free electricity into the mix than to try and count on reducing emissions as much as we need to.
Dan DeLore is our guest. Dan is former White House Director of Clean Energy and a Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School. Remember earlier in the show when you were really letting hybrid cars have it and you said, they're dinosaurs, they're Edsels. Well, you better listen to Peggy. Peggy says, my daughter owns a Hyundai hybrid, which gets amazing mileage. Once it was 179 miles per gallon. I'm that's amazing. I'm on my third Honda, which has 160,000 miles, only reaches 38 miles per gallon. My issue is this. When I trade this 2015 Honda Civic for a new hybrid or EV, it will not be taken off the road. It'll be resold as a great used car. Also, I'm concerned about lack of charging stations. That's another reason I'm hesitating in buying an EV running only on electricity. Please advise. And that's from Peggy.
Okay. Thanks, Peggy.
Way to let him have it, Peggy.
So let's see. What I said before was if you can't put a charger in your garage or on the side of your house, then that's a major issue. Even when there are more chargers out there, you want the ability to do that. And that's why people that live in apartment buildings or that don't have a dedicated parking space, which is almost half of the cars in the U.S. the last time I looked, then that's a real issue. But if you do, then you're going to wake up every morning with a wake up every morning with a full tank of gasoline and you didn't go to the gas station. You've got it right there. And yes, I mean, hybrids are better than a gasoline car. I don't think I said the opposite of that. What I did try to say is that once the stations are out there, and because the stations being out there, the charging stations are for your long distance travel.
Right.
Okay. If you have one at your location, then you know you only have to use those. You may never have to use those if you never make a long trip. You just won't. And so all I'm saying is that I think when people understand some of the things that I've just mentioned, that I'm not sure why someone would. I mean, I know one person who, you know, travels like only a few miles a day on their work commute, and I don't think they travel that much long distance, and yet they went with a hybrid, and I don't.
Well, flexibility. Maybe they're going to be on the run from the law at some point and have to go.
Well, I suppose there is a situation, but
long trips.
But, yeah. Anyway, I'll stop there. I just think that people, more people could easily use and like having an EV than think they could.
All right. We only have a minute left, but let's go to Providence, Rhode Island. Mark, you're on with Dan DeLore.
Hi, I'm a CPA, so I work with the EV credit a lot. And I also recently bought a Corolla hybrid, but I'm not going to hold that against you.
That's fine.
The reason, well, I can't look inside Elon Musk's head, but his cars no longer qualify for the EV credit for two reasons. He made too many of them. It only applies to the first amount.
Ah, that's right. I forgot about that. You're right. You're right.
Assembled in the U.S. So I think what he's saying is my competitors don't need this EV credit anymore since I can't get it.
Yeah. Thank you. No, you're absolutely correct. There was always that big cap that, you know, if you got to making so many, you know, EVs, then then your company was
already there.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Mark, we're going to leave it there. Well, go ahead, buddy.
He seems like such a nice guy, but he might just be out for himself. You never know.
Well, he's worth a few bucks, so you might have something there. But you never know. I'm not going to cast aspersions. All right, Dan DeLore. I assume you have enough charge in the – what do you drive a Tesla?
I do.
Yeah?
Yes.
You have enough charge to get home, or you want to plug
in? Oh, no, I was pausing because, yes, I bought it a while ago before.
So you wouldn't buy one now?
I might have to think harder
about it. Oh, very interesting. Dan DeLore, that's an interesting way to, very provocative way to end the show. All right, buddy. Hey, man. So
a lot of fun today.
You're scheduled. We'll see you in a couple months, right?
Okay.
Support comes from Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators serving the Greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. Well, thanks again to Dan DeLore of Vermont Law and Graduate School for being here today. Great to have him back in the saddle in Studio A. Don't forget the lockbox is open. We can use your support right now. Every dollar counts on day one of the fund drive. It's WAMC.org to make your pledge. There's no minimum. A couple bucks will do it. If you got a couple grand, go to town. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Ed Rosen for screening the calls. Ed has been answering phones during our lockbox segments where we are doing a roundtable panel. He's tired, but he's back again. Thanks, man. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Pets und Vets with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. We'll talk about your kitty with scabs and the dog who can't go to the bath. You'll just tune in tomorrow at 2. We'll see you then.